Continuing, the camp of the spirit of Porto Alegre is similarly split. There are those whose tactics for the transition period reflect their image of the world they want to build. It's sometimes called horizontalism. In practice, it seeks to maximize debate and the search for relative consensus among persons of divergent backgrounds and immediate interests. It's a search to institutionalize a functional decentralization of the movement and the world. And this group has also emphasized the reality of what is often called a civilizational crisis, by which is really meant a rejection of the basic objective of economic growth, and substituting for this objective the search for rational balances of social objectives that will result precisely in relative democracy and relative egalitarianism. Arrayed against them is the group that insists that in a struggle for political power, vertical organization of some kind is a sine qua non, without which the group is doomed to failure. And my interjection, it's easy to predict the emergence of that so-called argument, right? Given what we've learned about what power requires to exist, and that the only true alternative must be its opposite, and then added to which, what we know about the ongoing and unequivocal efforts of power to subvert our opposite. I think we can see in this notion of the need for some vertical organization, quote unquote, power acting through its network of agents, and whether such as these are from so-called less developed regions or no, their ideological positions out them. Once we're clear on our goal, there's no more splits. There's just working on it. No coercion, no force, but no being pulled off course. Continuing, this group, the group who protests that only power can combat power, right. That circular argument, we've been trapped in that for millennia. Thus, this group also emphasizes the importance of achieving significant short-run economic growth in the less developed, quote-unquote, areas of the present-day world in order to have the wherewithal to redistribute benefits. Right. Thus, the picture is not one of a simple two-sided struggle. I disagree. Continuing. But rather of a political field with four groups. And that is very confusing to everyone. My interjection, hopefully not anymore, right? Continuing. The confusion is at one and the same time intellectual, moral, and political. And this reinforces the uncertainty of the outcome. And another interjection. Believe me, we down here on the bottom, we much less confused than those folks in the intermediate positions. Continuing. Finally, this kind of uncertainty heightens the short-run problems of the existing system. Such uncertainty is both exhilarating, the feeling that action makes a difference, and paralyzing, the sense that we can't move, since the short-run consequences are so uncertain. This is true both for those who benefit from the existing system, the capitalists, and those who are the vast underclasses. And another interjection, we are wading thick in the lexicon problem here. What is the system? Who benefits and who doesn't? And in this, we're fit, the pundits. Continuing. So, to resume, the modern world system in which we are living cannot continue because it has moved too far from equilibrium and no longer permits capitalists to accumulate capital endlessly. Nor do the underclasses, that would be you and me, folks, nor do the underclasses any longer believe that history is on their side, and that their descendants will necessarily inherit the world. We are consequently living in a structural crisis in which there is a struggle about the successor system. Although the outcome is unpredictable, we can feel sure that one side or the other will win out in the coming decades, and a new reasonably stable world system or set of world systems will be established. What we can all do is try to analyze the historical options, make our moral choice about the preferred outcome, and evaluate the optimal political tactics to get there. History is on nobody's side. We all may misjudge how we should act. Since the outcome is inherently and not extrinsically unpredictable, we have at best a 50-50 chance of getting the kind of world system we prefer. But 50-50 is a lot, not a little. And that ends the chapter from the book, Does Capitalism Have a Future? The Emmanuel Wallerstein chapter. And my interjection to that last, we at best have 50-50 chance, but 50-50 is a lot, not a little, and history's not on nobody's side. History never was nor should be our concern, any more than the health of a system. Life ever was, ever will have my allegiance. And a 50-50 chance for the oceans? For so-called handwork designates slotted for bare existence, or for all of us to be told just settle for what you get, for what we choose to give? And never forget, even in that 50 that Wallerstein gives just to a so-called progressive outcome, there's no true freedom. No, that is not acceptable. I am sorry to have gone so long, but I want us to ponder this week, these words of Wallerstein. Please share them as widely and as deeply as you can. And my apology as well to Miklos Neasley. What I think I have to do is do a couple chapters, not chapters, a couple parts. Just record a couple parts at home. And I apologize for not doing it right now. And I will make up for it in future. So until next week, peace.